buddy, I will ask you this. Are you ready? For a little off the record, on the record, with the great Joe Campbell. That's right. Don't forget, three locations from the great firm, Campolo, Middleton, and McCormick. Westbury, Bridgehampton, and Ron Conkham of CMMLLP.com. And, you know, I always said Campolo was a first-round ballot Hall of Famer. You know, I always talk about the sports aspect of it. But even in society itself, there are very few people of the makeup of Joseph Nicholas Campolo. And guess what? I guess my thought process came to fruition because he is an inductee. And rightfully so, on November the 7th at the Crass Hollow, the aforementioned Joseph Nicholas Campolo. Joseph, how are you? Congratulations.
Jay, thanks so much, man. Appreciate the shout out. It was a nice surprise to see that. But you know, you're my biggest fan, so I appreciate the support.
So, you know, really, when you think about it, folks, and what am I talking about? Because basically, it's going to happen on November the 7th, and you know, this is all through Joe Wright, the Long Island Business News 2019 Business Hall of Fame inductee. And you're talking about some very distinguished leaders in the business community. That's what it's all about, right?
Yeah, I was actually shocked when I got notified that I had been inducted. I was, of course, very surprised and proud. And when I looked at past recipients, I thought maybe they had the wrong guy that they had included in me. But hey, it's, you know what? It's terrific, and I got to tell you, Jay, it's a total shout out to my entire team. You know, people don't get these recognitions alone. They just don't. It's an entire team effort, and my CMM team, my CMM family, they are just you know, they are just the greatest people that you can imagine. You know what I told my team recently, and I want to share it with you because I think you can appreciate it, is, you know, it was 35 years ago. I was in the Marine Corps, and there were 17 guys that I was stationed with, Jay. And we're brothers. We were through so much together, and here we are, 35 years later. And I love these guys, and I respect these guys, and to this day. And I never thought that I would have that bond with people again. And then here I am now with my CMM team. You know, they're just so amazing, so incredible, that I have that same exact bond I did when I was a young Marine with my fellow Marines. So truly a special time in my career, truly a special time for our firm. So we really appreciate the support.
Listen, I said this, we'll get into some stuff here, but, you know, all kidding aside, you know, if you know Joe and you read some of the stuff he does, and if you know some of the employees at his great firm who just rave. I have never heard so many people rave about one guy, but, you know, it all adds up. You know, it adds up to incredible leadership, in my opinion. It adds up to integrity. It adds up to vision and values and performance and dedication. And really, you know, the great Al Davis, Joe, said many years ago, and it's still the mantra of the team of the Oakland Raiders. It's still there in the arena they play, and that is commitment to excellence. And that is what you, sir, exude. You have a commitment to just that excellence, and you get it from all around you. I think that's a big credit to you, sir.
Well, I appreciate that, Jay. I really do.
Before Joe turns a shade of chartreuse, as far as the accolades, well-deserving, by the way. Let's get in. You know, I want to start out, because I've been talking about this a lot in the last couple of days, what's happening with the NBA and the country of China, the tweet from the Houston Rockets general manager, which set everything off last Friday in support of the Hong Kong protesters. It shows to me the NBA, how weak it was in not only denouncing the Daryl Morey tweet, in my opinion, Joe, but really kowtowing to a regime that is really nothing less than an imperialistic dictatorship. And it was Maurice Lapete Maury's tweet of support that really, you know, shows where we are at in society. An individual who expressed his right of communication, his freedom of speech, and yet denounced by the league, denounced by the owner, Tillman Fertitta. Shame on him. Really, shame on him. Because really, it's the state of mind right now we were at, and really just a lousy job by the NBA. We know what happens with the NBA in China. We know the dollars and everything else at stake, and the sneakers and all the paraphernalia sold over there, my goodness. But it showed such weakness, in my opinion, regarding the NBA. What happened?
Jay, it's the almighty dollar, right? It's always the almighty dollar. And I couldn't agree more. You know, these professional sports teams here in the United States, they try and pretend, you know, that they stand for a whole lot of things. They try and pretend they stand for integrity and honor and all of these great, valuable characteristics, and they want to try and pretend they're role models to our young kids. And then when they have an opportunity to show courage, to show real courage, they pass on it. And they punt and they fumble around. And they, you know, they take the weak way out because they don't want to ruin their cash flow stream from China. And look, most of the world does it. Most of the world does it with China. And let's put it in perspective. So the protests that are going on over there. So China, as we know, is a dictatorship. It's a communist dictatorship. And what they've done over time to try and, you know, appease sort of the radical Chinese intellectuals who are insisting on more human rights for Chinese citizens is they created this, you know, one country, two systems place where Hong Kong could be more progressive. Hong Kong residents could get more rights. You know, they would be able to have more rights. And then what China started doing because Hong Kong was becoming a little too progressive is they changed the law. Overnight, they changed the law, and they said, if you break the law in Hong Kong, you can be extradited to mainland China to be tried. And the trials in mainland China are not, you know, trials by jury. They're very, very oppressive. And so that sparked the protest, right? We're basically saying, we want basic human rights. We want freedom of speech. We want access to the Internet. I mean, China, I think Xi just has a switch in his bedroom, and he just flips it off like a light switch, and the whole Internet can go out in that country. I'm joking, but that's what it seems like. And so they're fighting for basic human rights over there, right? And so how can you take such a strong position? The NBA, you know, in the NFL, when Colin Kaepernick kneeled and everybody tried to say he has a right to freedom of speech, and all these people were coming out against, you know, people who were saying that Kaepernick shouldn't be able to kneel, and they were saying he should. It's his basic human rights, his basic freedom of speech. How could you support that position and then entirely take a different position with what's going on in China? They are cowardly and weak. They shouldn't worry about the financial repercussions. They should be doing what's right. And what's right is, you know what happened, Jay? A player, you know, tweeted something in support of the protesters. That's what sparked this whole thing off. And China wants an apology and wants that player denounced. I'd say, no way, go scratch. Freedom of speech is freedom of speech. It's something we cherish and something that should be protected. And I think it was despicable. And you look at, you know, Steve Kerr. I like Steve Kerr. I've always liked him. I liked him when he was a player. I thought he was a good coach. You know, but he's so quick to shoot his mouth off against President Trump and President Trump's policies. And then when it comes to China, he sits on his hands and he doesn't say anything. What is going on? I don't understand it.
Disgraceful. Disgraceful with Steve Kerr and throwing Pop as well. Popovich, who I had a ton of respect for. They're in the same boat. You're 100% right with Kerr. How dare Steve Kerr? Let Steve Kerr lose 60 games without Kevin Durant, I hope, this year. I'll tell you that much. And I'll say this about this lousy NBA commissioner, this Adam Silver. You know, trying to do a little damage control now, trying to get these games in play. It will not happen, I don't think. You know, let's not forget Adam Silver, Joe. He canceled an NBA All-Star game in Charlotte a couple of years ago. Remember that whole deal?
Yeah,
protest
that's
of the,
exactly right.
The state's anti-transgender bathroom legislation. This guy is a fraud, a phony. Beyond belief. This is the same guy The same guy, you mentioned Kerr and everything else, the same guy who encourages his coaches, okay, to rail against the president's immigration policies and his players to promote the Black Lives Matter deal. I mean, this is the same guy who has instituted a gender quota for referees. I mean, come on. I can't take Adam Silver anymore. I had a lot of respect for Adam Silver because before all this happened. But let's not forget what happened in Charlotte, North Carolina a couple of years ago with that legislation.
And
that
that's says exactly it all. Right, Jay. Exactly my point. The only thing that Adam Silver should have said was, while we respect that China is its own country, here in America we have freedom of speech, and our players are allowed to say whatever they want, whenever they want. Period, end of story. That's it. We support human rights. We support freedom of speech. That's the only answer. But what does he do? I'm scared. I got to pack up. I got to go over there. I got to go and try and make this right. I got to go and figure this out. Make what right? Make what right? A player supported the protesters' rights over there. He didn't do anything but support it. In our country, we have freedom of speech. In our country, we have a right to do it. This is exactly the point that I was making 2 years ago when we were talking about Colin Kaepernick. Okay? We have freedom of speech. Freedom of speech is freedom of speech. You can like it, you can don't like it. Let the market dictate how it's going to play out, but we have freedom of speech. But all of a sudden now we got to pack up an entourage and go over and kiss China's butts because we're afraid of losing money? Give me a break. Give me a break. They're all a bunch of phonies, Jay. They're a bunch of phonies. They've always been a bunch of phonies, and that's it.
It's all about the sneakers, okay? How many sneakers, pairs of sneakers they could sell over there, okay? It's all about the jerseys. I mean, we're talking about a freaking tweet, okay? In support of protesters over there, fight for freedom, stand with Hong Kong. That's all Maury tweeted. That's it. I mean, is that controversial? My goodness. I mean, who on this planet Earth, okay, with the capability of decent brain cells, okay, who wouldn't hope for those trying to advance democracy, ladies and gentlemen? Who wouldn't hope for that against an overweening, as I called it, Joe, imperial dictatorship? Who in their right mind would support those seeking justice? My goodness, it's unbelievable. I'll tell you, the NBA, if I watch a couple of games this season with the lousy Knicks and everything else, it'll be a lot for me. I tell you, I'm starting to despise this league even more so now.
Yeah, it was really, really upset me, Jay. I'm with you, man. It really upset me. It was a moment, you know, for consistency. It was a moment for a worldwide stand to show that the United States does stand for something, and freedom of speech is a rock and paramount to our basic human rights. And, you know, the NBA totally dropped the ball, made themselves look foolish and weak. And I'm with you. I'm over them. I'm over them. I'll find something else to spend my winters watching.
And where is, I'll tell you, and I love the guy. I think he's the greatest player I've ever seen, LeBron James. So disappointed in LeBron James. Where is LeBron James when he needs to be heard now? Okay? I don't hear anything from LeBron. Where is it? I don't hear it. If it's Colin Kaepernick and everything else, I get everybody chiming in. But on this, I haven't heard anything. Nothing. All it is right now is damage control from James Harden. Where is LeBron James in all of this, folks? I haven't heard a peep from LeBron James. Sad state of affairs. Joe Campola, off the record, on the record. Good start, Joe.
I'm glad your blood is flowing now, Jay.
I'm telling you, man. I've been talking about this, but I tell you, I can't take the NBA anymore. All right, tough to take what's going on in Washington on the latest regarding the impeachment inquiry. And I said this yesterday, Joe. It just seems to me, and it's obvious to me, what's happening here. These Democrats are trying, Pelosi and company are trying to streamline the process. It's almost as if, you know, everybody will have turkey and all the trimmings on Thanksgiving Day and an impeachment to boot of this president of the United States, at least the first couple of steps. I mean, you talk about a rush job beyond. That is what's happening right now in Washington. They have usurped all of the situations involved regarding civil rights and everything else, constitutional rights and everything here, in my opinion, as far as what's going on here. To me, you know, they're just trying to speed it up, speed up the process. Let's get the president out on a platter by Christmas Day. That's really what it is to me.
Yeah, it's that you hit the nail on the head. I mean, I think, you know, there's a game going on right now, which is the Democrats need to rush this because we are going into an election year in 2020, and they don't want this, bogging them down. And the Trump tactics are to delay, because they want this bogging them down. And the bottom line question, though, Jay, is who the hell is working in Washington? What is going on in this country? What work is being done? Where is anybody watching our national security? Is anybody doing anything to help the American people right now? I mean, it's incredible. Every single person's focus in Washington seems to be on impeachment, and it's absolutely incredible. It's disgusting to me that nobody's working anymore. Who's working for the taxpayers? You know, it drives me absolutely crazy. And you know, the Constitution. So I love that these elected officials, you know, they say that, you know, the Constitution demands that the president be impeached, and the Constitution requires that impeachment is held this way. It's not accurate. It's not true, you know, at all. Constitution does set forth that, you know, the president can be impeached for high crimes and misdemeanors, but it's very silent as to what the process is or what the rules are. And so Congress, you know, is able to make up the rules that they see fit to hold their impeachment inquiries, and the Senate's going to be able to make up its rules. And what's going on now is a lot of, and it's a good legal strategy on behalf of the president's team, because they are trying to show that it's severely politically motivated. You know, there's only been three other impeachments in the country. None of them have sufficiently ousted the president. Nixon resigned, and that was the only one that where the president was lost. But in all the other impeachment inquiries and hearings, they were held much more different. And this is, I think, what the president's point is that the Democrats are rushing, and they're doing it in a very unfair manner. That's what he keeps saying. So what does he mean by that, right? What he means is, you know, in the past when impeachment inquiries were opened up, especially most recently against Bill Clinton, the Republicans gave the president's legal team access. He gave the Republicans gave the Democrats access to the evidence, to the hearings, to everything that was going on during the entire process. And the Democrats aren't doing that now. You know, what the Democrats are doing now, and I don't know if it's right or wrong, because they have the right to create their own rules. What they're doing now is they're holding these hearings the way a prosecutor would work with a grand jury seeking an indictment. You know, a grand jury seeking an indictment, defense counsel, you know, has no ability to put on any witnesses, has no ability to cross-examine anybody, has no ability to even see all the evidence. They're sealed, they're private, they're silent, and that grand jury will come out with an indictment. And I think that's what Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats' tactics are right now, is to hurry this through and do it in a traditional way a grand jury would do an indictment, issue their articles of impeachment, and put it to the Senate to try the case, and the Senate will sit as the jury during the trial. I think that's why the president's most recent move was to bring Trey Gowdy on as part of his legal team, because he's a very skilled congressman. He understands the way the rules are being applied or misapplied there, and he's going to be able to help in that regard. Now, there's no right and there's no wrong. Congress has the ability to make its own rules, and this is where the Supreme Court weighing in is going to be very, very interesting, because if it goes to the Supreme Court, if any of these matters go to the Supreme Court, I don't think the president has a lot of help, particularly with his most recent nominees and appointees, because they have typically been hands-off justices. They have been typically guys who have said, look, Congress makes their own rules and the court's not going to decide those rules. So it's going to be really interesting to see the way this plays out. You know, they're saying that the president's, you know, refusal to comply with the process is something that can be impeached as well. I'm not necessarily sure that is accurate. I think the president is, you know, questioning his rights under the Constitution, under the executive branch, the rights to challenge certain subpoenas, the rights to assert executive privilege, and I think those are things that have to play out in court. Have there been orders? If judges issue orders and then the president defies them, I think that's clearly an obstruction, thing. So we're not there yet, but to me, the whole thing is really a shame, because I just don't know who's doing anything in Washington right now to help the American people.
Rick Scott said it best, Joe. The senator said it a couple of weeks ago, just flipping channels. I just happened to watch what Scott said. He said he has never seen dysfunction the way it is. This is a guy who is 9 months in to his flight. And, quite frankly, he said it all. I mean, that really rang so true to me. The fact of the matter is, this is the MO of what's happening on Capitol Hill right now. It's to get this guy out of the Oval Office as fast as they can. There is no need to go over a budget. There's no need to fund the government. There's no need to talk about gun control. There's no need to formulate health care, because right now, the only thing on Democrats' mind and Pelosi and company is to get Trump the hell out of the White House. That's really what it is. I mean, this is a rush to a final impeachment vote before Thanksgiving. Turkey trimmings and President Trump. That's what's on the platter right now. I mean, think about this, Joe. They are deposing witnesses behind closed doors and denying Republicans really fair time to ask the questions and the right to call their own witnesses. In fact, I don't even think they're even releasing a full interview transcript of any kind here. I mean, they should actually take a lesson from the Clinton years of how Republicans treated Clinton. Because Democrats are not doing the same thing with the president, I'll tell you right now. You know, they're leaking negative info and withholding favorable facts. And what they're doing, Joe, is they are feeding the fanatically anti-Trump media to repeat slanted interpretations to me. At least that's the deal as fact. I mean, there's just no constitutional effort at all to get the full facts. It's really, you know, as I said at the beginning here, it's a rush to sell the public on a narrative of presidential wrongdoing at its highest. That's really what it is. And you know something? The White House has every right to call out her game plan right now. It really is. And what is the Pelosi response to it all? I don't hear anything. Is she, I mean, really, is she afraid to just be fair here in the compliance of it all regarding the procedures? I'm starting to think she is. I think she's just afraid. I think she's simply afraid to do the right thing, the fair thing right now.
Yeah, and look, it's all politics, but, you know, that's what politics is. Politics is politics. I think if the Democrats were confident that they had a candidate that was going to be embraced by the Electoral College and could easily win in 2020, you probably would be seeing a different strategy right now. But, you know, to go after Joe Biden from a political perspective, I'm not saying from a moral or humanistic perspective, but purely from political tactics, was a smart move by Trump, because Biden presented the most mainstream moderate alternative candidate to Trump. And I think they recognized early on that, you know, most people who are just sick of all this nonsense and all this chaos and all the tweets and everything else and want to get back to some sense of normalcy so they can worry about the things they worry about. Joe Biden, you know, Joe Biden was the guy who represented that the most closely, to normalcy there was. So to go after Biden was smart, and having gone after Biden now they have a conundrum, right? And that is that the next one in line is Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren happens to be an incredibly strong, articulate woman who is, who's a great presidential candidate. She is. But her views, particularly her views on the economy, on banking, on investing, on capitalism, are very left, and that makes everybody scared, because what's going to happen to the stock market? What's going to happen to all these things? And now all of a sudden you're going to see all of these people rethinking the map if it's Trump against Warren, because they're going to say, do I want to put up with this lunatic's tweets and all this other nonsense, but have somebody who's very focused on making sure we remain prosperous as a nation, or do I want a president who's going to be looking to disassemble Wall Street in a capitalistic way that the United States does business? And that's going to be a real threat. And everybody, you know, everybody gets that. And that's the problem. So what do the Democrats have to do now? They have to go after Trump, you know, as aggressively as possible and try and get him out of office. Can they do that? I don't think so. I don't know. I did read, though. I will tell you, I see that there's public support growing for impeachment. But I'll tell you, I don't think that's because of the underlying facts. I think it's because everybody is just so sick of this, Jay. They're so sick of it that they just want it to be over. And that's a very dangerous thing, too. I just want to mention, to me, that's a very dangerous thing, right? Because I get it. I get that Trump's the lightning rod that sort of brought all these issues to the forefront in America. And for me, from a constitutional perspective, and as a Constitution junkie that I am, he's put amazing things up that would never have been brought up from past presidents or anybody, really, in terms of how controversial he's been. So constitutionally, it's really truly been an amazing thing to watch, all the constitutional issues that have come up. But to go down an impeachment road right now, if they were to remove him, and it was Mike Pence against Elizabeth Warren, I think everybody, you know, seems to think Elizabeth Warren hands down wins that election. So politics is politics. It's absolutely, you know, disgusting to watch. I guess we can tolerate it if at the end of the day our national security is safe and our economy is safe. I don't know who's watching the switch on either of those right now. And these are just political issues. So there's no crime. So again, the president right now, what they're looking at is not criminal behavior. I think the Department of Justice, and I think everybody has sort of agreed that, you know, what he was doing seemed reckless and ridiculous, but with Ukraine, but it wasn't criminal. And so now it's the question of what is the politics of it, and how much do we as American people, how much are we willing to stomach where a president seems to be having these types of conversations with foreign leaders? I can guarantee you, Jay, that if we were to unseal all the transcripts of all the conversations that all the other presidents in our history have had with foreign leaders, we would find things that are 1,000 times worse. But here we are today in the United States, and we're trying to sort this all out. And, you know, it's going to be very, very interesting to see how this breaks. I just don't see him getting convicted. Again, the 51% of American people right now, I think, are just sick of it all. And that shouldn't be able to exist. It shouldn't be that if somebody, a political party's tactics against anybody is, let's just do investigation after investigation after investigation after investigation until the American people get so sick of it that they want to throw the person out because they're tired of investigations. That's not a fair way to run a government, I don't think.
No, President Zelensky out of Ukraine said there was no blackmail involved. This is just a failed outcome of the Mueller investigation. And that's where Pelosi, Schiff, and company say, you know what, we got a little bit of a window opening here. Let's go for it. That's really what it is, Joe. And quite frankly, and I still ask the question, is it completely absolved for Joe Biden and his son Hunter? I mean, come on. I mean, do we not have an investigation into that whole mess? The $50,000 a month, the nice check little Hunter came back with on that airplane when Joe was in office? And yet I got to hear Sleepy Joe saying yesterday, you impeach the president, should be impeached. What about Hunter Biden and Joe Biden and all of this stuff? Nobody brings that up at any time. What about that investigation, that whole mess? You know, I mean, come on. There's something that has gone awry in this country, I'll tell you that much. And that's common sense. Common sense, the hatred of this president. You don't have to love him, okay? But the absolute hatred of this president right now is so apparent that is why Rick Scott said there's dysfunction. Nothing is getting done. For the very reason of people trying to get this guy out of Pennsylvania Avenue and send him back to Trump Tower. At the expense of every American out there, okay? Because we're not focusing on key issues here. We're not. I'm very concerned. I'm concerned about the safety now aspect of everything going on here, too. Well, we'll see how it plays.
I tell you, right, from a national security perspective, Jay, I mean, isn't this a great time for our enemies to be plotting against us? I mean, that's what I'm scared to death of. Our commander-in-chief is clearly, you know, just out there distracted with trying to find ways to, you know, doing the Democrats and our leadership and the Democrats are all trying to find ways to do in the president. And I want to know who's watching, you know, who's watching the walls, who's making sure that all those Marines and soldiers out there that are trying to protect us are getting the focus and support that they need. I'm very nervous about that. Because this is nuts. Look, I get the issue, Jay, and it's a fair question. I think it's a fair question to be asking. And to me, it's all along the lines of the SAT scandal, the scandal we see these celebrities going to jail for, you know, for now. It, you know, and the point in that case was, you know, if I want my kid to go to Harvard and I give Harvard $5 million to start the Joe Campolo, constitutional study group, and then my kid gets into Harvard Law School, you know, magically, no harm, no foul. It's the way business is done, and that's the way it is. But if I go and I say, to an admissions officer at Harvard, you know, I'm going to give you $500,000 and let my kid in, it's a crime. Can't do that. It's an overt crime. And the question is, and it's a fair question to be asking about the president's conversations with the Ukrainian president. It's a fair question. Was it a quid pro quo request or was it not? That's a fair question, and it is. But an equally fair question to ask that wasn't asked is also about, you know, Joe Biden and his son when he was vice president, and it wasn't asked. And I don't think because we were at a different point in our country's history and we were focused on other things. You know, but I do agree that if it's fair at this point to be talking about the president's conversation with the Ukrainian president, then it is fair to understand the relationship that Joe Biden and his son had with the Ukraine, because Joe Biden is running for president. He's running for president. It's a fair inquiry. We can't have it both way, you know, one way or the other. We have to have it both ways. If we're going to look at President Trump and whether he should be impeached or reelected, then we need to be looking at Joe Biden, who's running for president and was vice president at the time. So we need to have both those conversations and discussions and figure out who we as Americans, what will we tolerate? Will we tolerate those types of conversations or not? Are we okay with them or are we not okay with them? And that's the question. And so I agree to a certain extent, Jay, that, you know, Biden should be under the microscope on this as well, because it's a fair question. He is running for president.
Hiring a prosecutor and having a kid on a guy on a board of directors? With no experience, $50,000 a month, are you kidding me? And yet, we're not investigating that aspect of it. I'll tell you that much. To me, that's a crime in itself. And I'll say this. You open up a can of worms to me with this whole SAT deal. Felicity Huffman in the 14 days, Joe. I mean, what? With good behavior, she gets out in 3 hours? I mean, what a joke. What a joke that was. And the biggest aspect of that is, think about the poor kid who worked his tail off, okay, of getting a decent score and getting into a great college and negated, okay, his paperwork thrown in the trash can because Felicity Huffman's kid got in, okay? Think about that aspect. Nobody talks a lot about that. And yet she gets 14 days good behavior out in a couple hours. I'm sorry. Wrong thing. Joe Campolo with us, Off the Record, On the Record. By the way, Joe does a great blog, folks. Check it out. It's called Off the Record. Talks about everything. And we bring it here on the radio, On the Record, Off the Record, On the Record. With the great JNC, Hall of Fame inductee, by the way. Very proud of him. Coming up November the 7th, Crest Hollow, Woodbury. Joe, so the tax return, you know, it's interesting. Well, you had the DA in Manhattan, Cyrus Vance Jr., actually won a victory in court, Monday. In his ongoing battle to look at the president's tax returns. But wouldn't you know, it was short-lived because, you know, you had the judge in the case throwing out the lawsuit by Trump to stop Vance from getting his tax records from an accounting firm. You know, it's interesting how the judge, to me, you know, the expectation of blanket immunity The judge called it repugnant and everything else to the nation's governmental structure, constitutional values, the whole nine yards there. But really, wouldn't you know it, mere minutes later, lawyers for Donald Trump filed an emergency appeal. And the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit granted, I didn't think it was going to happen, granted his request for a temporary stay pending an expedited review of the case. Were you shocked at that particular aspect of this?
No, I wasn't shocked at it. And this is a perfect point, Jay, to demonstrate sort of the craziness that goes on in this country, right? So we just came off talking about, you know, the president asks the president of the Ukraine to have his prosecutors loop in with the Department of Justice and take a look at Hunter Biden's dealings in the UK, and people want to impeach the president because they're saying he used his political office to try and dig up dirt on one of his political opponents, all right? And I get that, and that's a fair question. But what's gone on in this country, you know, like Donald Trump or don't like Donald Trump, what's gone on in this country for the past, you know, 3 years is every single Democratic person in the country that holds power has launched some sort of investigation into the president, okay? So, in essence, what we've done is, you know, the DNC has unleashed all of its investigators to start, I don't know how many different investigations there are, to start how many investigations into the sitting president of the United States, because they want Democrat to win the presidency. So it's like this totally weird situation where, you know, if you're the president, you can't ask somebody to investigate somebody, but when you're the president, the opposing party can unleash hundreds of investigations against you on all fronts. And that's totally appropriate. I don't think it is. You know, the law is clear for a reason. And this has nothing to do with Trump or anything. It's been the law for a while. And that is that a sitting president, because of the important issues that a sitting president needs to deal with, a criminal investigation and criminal charges can't be brought against the sitting president. That's been the longstanding policy of it. And so what happens is they can't, on civil matters right now, they haven't been able to get the president's tax returns. So they have the district attorney and prosecutors, you know, trying to subpoena them in the context of a criminal proceeding, okay? And in state court, you know, the federal laws don't matter. So they go and they go to the Second Circuit with an emergency application after the state courts rule that the tax records should be released because of a criminal investigation. And the law is clear. A sitting president is not able to be indicted and not able to undergo a criminal investigation while they're in office, and especially while there's an impeachment inquiry going on, because that's the appropriate way to address it, is through an impeachment. And so I think, you know, I think the Second Circuit stay is correct. They'll hear it. I don't know which way they're going to go in terms of deciding it. They may decide it one way or another, but then there's going to be an application immediately to the Supreme Court, who's going to, if they talk about releasing it, is going to talk about staying it. And then I think that is going to get stuck in the Supreme Court for a while, and, you know, we're not going to see the president's tax returns for a very long time, if at all.
But here's the question, Joe, and I understand it, and I get Marrero's remarks, the judge in the case. You know, to me, I've always said this, and it's common knowledge. If you have nothing to hide, what the heck? Show it. What is the big thing about these returns? You know, the only thing I resent the president doing is the fact that he's still telling us, well, we have an audit going on. This audit's been going on for 5 years. I mean, my goodness. This has to be the longest tax return in the history of the world. I mean, if there's nothing to hide, why the beef here? Why not just come out with it and show it? I get everybody has rights and everything, President of the United States. But isn't there some aspect to that of saying, you know what, there's an audit going on. That's why we can't, you know, I mean, come on. It's getting to be old hat already with this stuff.
Yeah, I totally disagree with the you know, with the position of the president on this. I think people who are candidates for higher offices, whether it's Congress, whether it's Senate, whether it's the president, should have to disclose their tax returns. I can't get a loan from a bank for $500 without giving them my tax returns. to verify my income. I think that there should be disclosure. I think that that should be part of the process, because I think that there's a lot of conflicts that could exist in terms of stock holdings that you have, in terms of investments that you made. I think all of that should be disclosed. So I totally disagree. And I feel that anybody who's running for those offices should have to disclose their tax returns and allow the public to understand, what their dealings are and what they've been doing and who they've been doing business with for all of these reasons. Now, Trump, there was these collusion accusations. There's all this stuff going on during his campaign. There was and listen, Trump's as narcissistic as they come. He likes to tell people he's a multi-billionaire. I don't know what's in his tax returns. And certainly in this climate, he's not going to voluntarily release them, because the media would spend nothing else but picking apart every single thing that's in his tax return. But I think it was silly. I think we should have all insisted, and the rule should be that for those offices, people should disclose their tax returns. I can't get along without it. So why should he be able to be president without doing it?
Joe, you're right. What's good for the goose, good for the gander. You know what? Show the return. You're a businessman. We know a million dealings in and around the world and everything. Let's just make sure everything's on the up and up. That's all. Show the returns already. Don't use the audit excuse. This thing has been audited for the last 5 years. Stop it already. It's getting silly. All right. I talked about this early in the program, Joe. Just go over it. A pair of exceptionally hard-fought arguments yesterday with the Supreme Court. And I stated early on the show, really kind of struggled to decide whether this landmark, this 1964 civil rights law, Title VII, bars employment discrimination based on sexual orientation and transgender status. You got a lot of people chiming in. I think it comes down to Gorsuch, in my opinion. I said it earlier. This is a guy, he's an avowed believer in textualism, meaning he really considers the words Congress enacted to me rather than the evidence drawn from other sources. It's going to be fascinating what comes about in year 2020 on this.
Yeah, so two great arguments. And Jay, one of the things that I think is really important for people to understand is when they talk about conservative justices and they talk about liberal justices, these two cases that came up really highlight what is meant by that. The conservative justices typically are the justices that are going to say, the text of the law is the text of the law. Judges can't put a word in there. They can't put a comma in there. They can't do anything. All they can do is read what it says. And if it says what it says, then we're going to apply the meaning to it. If it doesn't, then we got to kick it back to Congress to make sure that Congress passes the law that they want to pass, right? And that's typically what conservative justices have done in the past. And what liberal justices, and why they're called liberal justices is justices will say, come on, we know what the intent was. And we're not going to require, it to go all the way back to Congress for clarification. Everybody knows what the intent is, and that's so we're going to make it law. And that's the eternal debate between conservative and liberal justices, because nobody really in modern society today can say that companies should be able to fire somebody because they're gay. There's no real mainstream moderate people that are going to say, somebody should be able to be fired simply because they're in a same sex relationship or whatever. It's just not mainstream. And so none of the justices sitting there, I think, are saying that. The justices who want to, rewrite the law are the ones who are saying, when Title VII says you can't be discriminated based on sex, it wasn't about sexual preference. It was about whether you were male or female. So two cases. One was, where a man in a same-sex relationship was terminated, and he claims it was because he was gay. And the second one was because of a transgender woman wanted to identify with her female role at work when previously she identified as a male. And so it's they're two separate issues. Both very interesting, both very, very interesting cases. I think with the case where the man alleges he was terminated simply because he was gay, I think that's a slam dunk. I don't think that the Supreme Court is going to allow that to slip through the cracks. And they're just going to say, in line with what I think almost every state out there's human rights laws say, which is you can't discriminate based on, sexual preference. It just can't do it. The transgender case is a little different. A lot of questions came up about bathroom use. I think it was Justice Sotomayor who asked about bathroom use, who asked about, all the different scenarios. And that's a different, set of circumstances that has to be sort of thought through. The counsel for the ACLU kept punting and saying those issues aren't before the court. The only issue is, can someone be terminated from their employment because of it? A lot of interesting issues. So, I think you're right. I think, Neil Gorsuch, Justice Gorsuch, who people, try to portray as, incredibly conservative and not progressive for civil rights, I think he's a textualist. And I think, sex means sex, and it's going to be an interesting way to see how they decide between those two cases.
Yeah, whether it be Congress or the courts, a fascinating course of events to take place in the coming year. Joe, before we go, and we'll keep pumping this up in the next couple of days, you got a big event on the 16th in Ronkonkoma, the Art of Getting Things Done. Folks, you can register cmmllp.com, also on the 6th of November in Southampton, 738-9100. And it's really about getting things done, results plan, results delivered, that type of thing. Lots of questions. You're going to map it all out there.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people talk, few people do, Jay. So what I'm trying to do is help the business community come together with their plan for 2020 and figure out how they're going to execute on it. It does no good to talk about it. It does no good to put it on paper. You got to get out and you got to execute.
No question, and another great one on the 21st. I tell you, CMM Academy and CMM Cares, nothing better. The first annual wine and dine benefit to celebrate some of the world's best wines, global taste experience. That's on the 21st over at the St. George Golf and Country Club. Lots of great stuff there, and we'll talk about that in the next few as well. Can't thank you enough. Hearty congratulations. Inductee, Hall of Famer at Crest Hall on November 7th. We'll keep an eye on that. Joe, we'll have you on prior to that.
But, yes, we will, sir.
Hearty congratulations, and thanks for your time today, sir.
All right, my man. Bye.